The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. Keep your mission on your mind, and your mind on your mission. This is Mission Minded with Michael Coleman.
Hi-ho, welcome to another edition of Mission Minded. We're keeping your mind, your mission on your mind. It airs every Wednesday at 12 and 7, exclusively here on Tony Curry Radio. Of course, you can download the Tony Curry Radio app and listen anywhere 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We have 10 different shows we play. Mission Minded is one of my favorite because I co-host it with Michael Coleman. And Michael, as we were just speaking before we start our show, you can now go to Spotify, search Tony Curry Radio, or search Mission Minded, and you go back and listen to all the shows that we've done together. So people can go back and see how this show has actually grown over the last month and a half. How you doing, my brother? Everything good?
I'm doing fantastic. Just ready to continue to grow what we're doing. We feel like we're putting out good information, hopefully information that's helping people and responding to some real life things that they may be struggling with. And we just hope it's benefiting them. We certainly have enjoyed doing it.
You may have recognized his name, Michael Coleman, or even his voice. Of course, he's the executive director of Jimmy Hale Mission here in Birmingham, and he has taken that organization just in the 3 short years he's been there to new heights, and we're certainly loving the Mission Minded show. This is a really, really bizarre, strange employment time in our lives, not only because of the pandemic and certainly the virtual aspects of it, but also because of what you call the great resignation, or some people call it the mass resignation. So many people have, from a passion standpoint, realized, hey, listen, this is not what I want to do for a living. I want to be happier. And because there are so many jobs available right now, a lot of people are willing to jump the street and go work somewhere else, maybe even for less if they know it's going to be something they're going to do later on in their career. I want to bring up a couple of notes here, and then we'll get into it. 65% of people who have lost or changed jobs in the last 2 years have done so voluntarily, which is crazy. And we used to have 1 in 72 jobs you could do virtually. Now it's 1 in 7. So a lot of people, and really the worker, and you're probably seeing this at a non-for-profit level, the worker has got more leverage than they've ever had, don't they?
Oh, absolutely. No question about it. And I was just having lunch with a good friend of mine. And he was talking about he works for a major insurance company. And it's really what a lot of other companies found out was everybody was so hesitant to go to a remote model because it was the unknown. They didn't know anything. What equipment is it going to require? Are we going to lose productivity? What's the cost going to be? Just on and on and on. But if you can say that there was an advantage to COVID, and I know you got to look hard sometimes to find that silver lining in the dark cloud. But it forced people to have to adjust. It was no longer a question of, is this a good idea? They had to. And some of the fallout from that is that good and bad is that people have a lot more options. And he was stating how he was working with a group of people and they were all down in Montgomery. Well, he's now allowed to come back to his hometown, Birmingham. His immediate supervisor is still his supervisor, but she's now in Jacksonville, Florida. And they're all doing the same job, and because they figured out how to do it and do it proficiently and effectively. And so the businesses that are doing well in this are those who can adjust. The nonprofit, though, typically, unless you're just a super large nonprofit with just a lot of resources, it's not that simple. And I talk a lot about the nonprofit world, about even small nonprofits, the need to stay flexible and fluid for things like this, the unexpected things like a COVID, and how do you deliver services? Because you can do things like sell insurance from a distance, but it's very difficult when you have the responsibility to care for the homeless, or you're providing direct counseling services and care services to do that remotely. And so there's so many of my nonprofit brethren who are just struggling to make sure how to compete with this great resignation, as we're calling it.
No, I think you bring up a great point, because you're also talking in most cases a non-for-profit where you're not highly paying people, and money is always an issue. You're always trying to raise not only more advocacy, but also awareness and money for whatever worthy cause that you're trying to work out. So what has been the biggest impact for you when you talk about doing things virtually? Of course, you are always trying to fundraise and bring in money for your organization, the Jimmy Hale Mission. But what's been the biggest impact to you through COVID, through the pandemic?
Well, as you know, we feel like we're personally very competitive, but it's caused me from a leader's perspective to do a couple things. Number one is to really pay attention to those who are leaving as to why they're leaving. Mm-hmm. Is it something in the environment that I'm creating, or something about a message that I'm sending, maybe completely unintentionally, this helping them with their decision? Now, the vast majority of people that I've seen in our organization have either just retired because it's that time in their life, or they are being promoted out to another position. And I never want to stand in the way of people progressing in life. And so I encourage that, even though I'm sad to see them go. I have a key person and on our staff who's undergoing that right now. But I was really struck when I dug into the research, and there's been so much research, especially lately, as to why is it that people leave? And then you throw in something like this great resignation. Well, we're trying to get to the underlying cause, and we've touched on it already, which is, the bottom line is job satisfaction. A lot of people think it's money, and what the research is showing, that money is still the number one reason somebody will leave one job and go to another job. So you can be satisfied with a job, and you're making X amount of dollars, but if somebody comes along and says, I'm going to give you a job, even if it's a job that you may not be passionate about, but if they're going to offer you $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 more a year, it's very difficult for most people to turn down. So money can attract people based on that. And that's still the number one. But, and just, if you just look at job satisfaction, it is more than half of the people comment it's on their coworkers and their immediate boss. And so, lots of times we think we'll just throw more money at it. Well, that may be a factor. You may be underpaying your people. But just like you said, in a nonprofit world, sometimes there's not options, because you have two key elements in a nonprofit world: those who are dependent upon donations from others. And so you have a little bit more flexibility. If you can raise more money, that gives you more ability to pay more or either hire additional people. But lots of people that I know that deliver services are kind of strapped in. They don't make it off donations. They're government funded. Mm-hmm. And that's very finite. Like, here's the number, this is what you have. Yeah. And you can't raise salaries from what you said in that grant to the government that you're going to pay people. You can't just throw in and create a new position. You're very limited. And so if you're a leader and all of a sudden you see this exodus, I mean, it can make the difference of whether you just survive altogether, or certainly whether you can continue to deliver the services that you're contracted to do. And so, you know, it just made me delve into this a little bit and just think, both my own experiences and look at the research, what are some of the things, if you find yourself in that position, and I guess this could equally apply to small businesses, because I have a small business. And so that's obviously on the for-profit side. And you know, you're still limited as to resources. If your sales are flat, or, you know, that doesn't, you may want to give somebody a large raise, but you may not can. And so you're like, okay, well, I can't pay them as much. How do I make them want to stay? Mm-hmm. And if you can create that environment and know and pay attention to the small things, it can be all the difference in the world of somebody saying, you know what, I'm really happy here. I wish I was making more money, but I'm happy here, and that matters. I'm at peace here. I enjoy coming to work. And you can hold on to employees and get more productivity out of them if you can create that environment than just people chasing dollars.
Do you? And Michael Coleman joins us here, mission-minded. You can hear us every single week, 1 and 7 o'clock on Wednesdays, and of course now on Spotify, so you can go back and listen to all of our episodes. Just search Tony Curry Radio or Mission Minded. Do you kind of feel like, though, through all this mass resignation, and it's unlike anything we've ever seen in the history of economics here in the United States, that there's a little bit of a false hope that eventually things are going to correct themselves? Because I'm 56 years old, or 55, soon to be 56. I remember having three jobs, and my dad said, "You're so blessed to have three jobs," because it was difficult to find work. Our unemployment rates are incredibly low right now, and to the benefit of workers, they are being able to go to their bosses and say, "Listen, I need this and this and this, or I'm going to leave." But don't you think through our cyclical life that things will correct themselves again to the point where you maybe should be blessed with what you have and not be willing to take that huge risk, or not?
Well, you know, historically, the economy is up and down. You're going to have bubbles. You're going to have recessions. We keep trying to add things to keep that, to try to keep it, the pathway as smooth as possible. Mm-hmm. But there's just so many variables that go in there. I mean, look, right now, we're already suffering from inflation. Now, the potential war between Russia and Ukraine is out. That's going to continue to skyrocket oil prices. And that has a down effect, especially people who are living paycheck to paycheck. And now they're going to have to pay even more money for gas. I mean, so there's so many variables that you can't control, oftentimes, the big picture. And while that's very frustrating, you have to kind of focus on what I can control. And that goes back to kind of creating the environment. I will tell you one interesting thing is that here at the Mission, after the recovery process and to get people, you know, long-term recovery, we're focused on living wage employment, which we're defining as $15 an hour or more. Well, 4 years ago, it was very difficult to find somebody starting out at $15 an hour. And now that's just the standard.
Yeah.
I mean, people won't even look at a job hardly unless they're making $15 an hour. We have there was an announcement made last year that Smucker's is coming to Birmingham. They're going to build a factory. They're going to invest $1.2 billion. And all they're going to make there are Uncrustables. And I've never had an Uncrustable, but I heard they're like crack cocaine. I mean, yeah, they're very addictive. But the bottom line is they're going to pay, the word is, of course, I haven't started yet, but the word is they're going to pay line workers $25 an hour to make these Crustables and sell them around the world. And it just blows my mind because I'm the same age as you. And when I was growing up and getting ready to, of course, I went to the military, but the factory jobs around there were paying about $3.50 to $4 an hour. Yep. To build car parts and all those other kind of things. So it is, it's just a different world. And so how do you compete? I mean, I can't pay somebody here at the Mission $25 an hour to do the services that the Smuckers in the world can. So, you know, what can I do and what can I control that will enable me to create enough job satisfaction that somebody's not staying on LinkedIn trying to find what's the next greatest step out of here. And it's a huge challenge. And it's one that I know that a lot of leaders and a lot of managers are going home at night and wringing their hands saying, you know, just from day to day, there's just so much uncertainty, but you know, what can I do?
Well, but from an advantage standpoint, I would think because you're running a non-for-profit and certainly since you have a successful Jimmy Hale Mission platform, I would think that at least you can string through the real job seekers and the ones that are just doing it for the money, right? Because, I mean, if they're looking for that type of money, they're not going to go work for a non-for-profit. They're going to go work for a for-profit because they can build their coffers and they can continually get benefits and make more money that way. So I would think for a non-for-profit, you are finding the people that are super compassionate about, you know, the purpose and the belief of what you have in your organization, in this particular case, the Jimmy Hale Mission. And so, right? You're not, they're not falling between the cracks, right? As opposed to someone who's just looking for a, because I tell my 17 year old is fixing to go to college in 2 years. And I keep telling him the same thing my mom and dad told me and for generations before us, you know, don't just do it for the money. We know that I think it's like 72% of people out there say they don't like what they do for a living. It pays their bills. They have a nice car and they live in a nice house, but they hate going to work every morning. And when you are happy with what you do, in this particular case, a non-for-profit, it makes life more enjoyable regardless of the money you're making. Right.
Yeah. And I will tell you, that's always the goal. You try to understand in the interview process, why does somebody want to come work? When they likely have the talent and ability to make more money, why do they choose to come work there? What I've learned is there's really two key people in nonprofits that you'll find, and they're those who are very passionate and dedicated to the mission and just feel like, hey, I'm taking ownership in our purpose here. It matters to me. I think about it. I'm really driven. And then there's those people in the world who are just, no matter what job they're doing, they're just mediocre. They get by. And so lots of times people, it's easier sometimes to get lost in a not-for-profit and not have a high standard. And that's a leadership problem that I would like to do a talk on one day, is how to recognize and push your employees to be the best they can and to take ownership in your mission and why that's so important. But yeah, so sometimes we see it to where you're like, I've got to have someone. I've just got to have somebody who's drawing on breath to come do this. And that's the disadvantage where you can find yourself, is you don't have people who are passionate. You're having to take people who, you know, will show up and do a so-so job, but are not going to be on fire. And that's never a good situation when you have to build your organization with that pool of employees.
We're talking about, obviously, a lot of different people here. We're not talking just about people that are just getting out of college and expect to make a six-figure salary. We're not talking about people maybe who are already in a business who have put 7 or 8 years into it. Maybe they're 29, 35 years old, and they see the ceiling that they could reach. And then we're talking about people that perhaps are my age, which makes it really difficult, because if you're trying to talk about changing a career, you need to do it sooner than later, because it's very difficult to start a brand new career path when you're in your 50s. But let's start with the people who are just getting out of college. Obviously, you've set yourself up. You went to a particular college to learn a skill, to have a talent to do something, and you're hoping to find a job in that area. What would you say to people like that who are into missions and into non-for-profits? What should they look for in an organization if they're going to come work for, say, Jimmy Hill Mission?
Yeah, well, I think you, and it's very tough for people, let's just say, who are getting out of college, to really know for sure what their passion is, or how that passion is going to be shaped moving forward. So you have to get into the work and learn the nonprofit world, and not be driven, of course, by money, but be driven towards purpose. And you see this with more and more people, because one of the things that they may not appreciate is that's such an attractive quality. Because you can tell when people come to work and they're excited, and they're excited about impacting lives and making a difference in their community, and they see it in their job and their position in a larger framework of having purpose. And you can see it in how they're motivated. You can see it how they attack their task, how they're thinking about it, the ideas they bring to the table. So when you're first starting out in life, don't get bogged down in dollars. All that will come later on, but you're going to need to develop your skills. You need to hone your passion and your abilities and move forward and ask a lot of questions and really engage people about their experiences and about what, I mean, there's so many people that I have sat with and said, you know, tell me your perspective, tell me your world. And without all of that, boy, my perspective today would be so much different. It would be much more narrow. And I'd be making so many more mistakes if I had not, over the years, been shaped by so many just brilliant people that I've had the privilege of coming in contact with.
You probably said Michael Coleman joins us here, Mission Minded. It's his show. It airs every single week here on Wednesdays at 1 and 7. And, of course, you can also find us on Spotify. Just search Mission Minded or Tony Curry Radio. You probably see this a lot in people that perhaps work for the same industry, maybe even the same business for 35 or 40 years. They got their pension, they resign or they retire, but there's still something left. They still have a hole in their heart because they feel like their entire life they worked for the man, they made a good living, but they were making things for other people, and they really feel like they didn't give back to their communities or really explore their passion to help others in this particular business. So when you have people, say, at Jimmy Hill Mission, who decide that they no longer want to be part of your organization because they want to make more money, where do they normally go? Because I would think working for a non-for-profit would be a great attribute. First of all, a great resume builder, because it shows you care and you're compassionate and you're a good people person, right? I mean, it's more than just sitting at a desk job for 35 or 40 years, getting your pension, going home.
Yeah, ideally. Of course, there's a thousand variables to the scenario that you just presented. But look, it's human nature. I understand. And I'll just give you one quick example. My development director, who is leaving, and I'm really sorry to see him go, young guy. But why is he leaving? Well, he's not leaving because he's not satisfied. He's leaving because his dream job came open, and it's not going to be that much more money than what he's making. But he gets to go be executive director over a wildlife center in Pelham, and I could not be more happy for him. Now, it hurts me inside, but I would never do anything because I care about him, and he knows I care about him. Not everything I've done to this point is helped to develop him towards becoming that person. So it's just like, hey, we don't want to see our children sometimes leave the nest, but we know it's the right thing and it's good and we're happy for them, no matter the emotions, you know, we may have. So this is, again, gets back to the culture. And I want to touch on just a couple of things because it's really important for nonprofit leaders to say, well, what can I do? And so, you know, one of those things, it is about culture, a supportive culture, which means you have to put not necessarily what you want, but you have to say what is in the best interest of my employees. And so what's in my development director's best interest is to support him and help him transition and make that that as successful and a peaceful transition as possible. And that totally disrupts my life. I've got big things going on, and he's in the heart of a lot of those things. And but I've seen leaders blow up that environment. Like when key people leave, is they trash talk them and they tear them down, and the people who are left behind see that negativity and they go, hey, well, when is my time to leave? And so what it shows is it shows a disloyalty. It shows that you're really not interested in the person. You're interested more in a bottom line thinking. And that's when you see more that attitude can permeate an organization to where you may say, hey, we're a team here. But as soon as somebody steps up to move out, you know that you're on the bad side of the boss. And that's something you don't want to that can infect an environment and give people a reason to go ahead and want to check out. I came across something and we've talked about, I think, on one of the shows is the England changing to the 40-hour work week. Excuse me, the 4-day work week. And so I started pitching that through the organization and just said, hey, what kind of difference would that make? Because right now we're looking at probably a 7-8% annual inflation rate. And here's the thing, that means I would have to match that 8% of pay raise just for my employees break even.
Yeah.
Well, I can't do that. And I know I can't do that. So that affects their bottom line. And so how do I communicate to them in a way that says, hey, that matters to me. I can't fix it, but I care about it. So let me try to be creative in some other ways that I could do that. And one of those is we're looking at a 4-day work week. And so what it would look like is some people were like, well, we can't go to 4 days. We do services 5 days. Well, we do services 7 days a week.
Yeah.
But what you can do is you can have Monday through Thursday, and then another group work Tuesday through Friday. So you can still cover those days during the week, but still, so you just have to be creative and you have to be willing to change and do things different. And this is, I see this in so many leaders, certainly not just in the nonprofit world, but they do not know how to problem solve or be creative and think outside the box, or they're not willing to because they are not comfortable with that kind of fluidity in an organization. But you think about how many people go, well, I may not make as much here, but you know what? I got a 3-day weekend every week. That makes a huge amount of difference because they're going to work 10. They're going to work longer on those 4 days. They're going to work 4 10-hour days. But imagine how you would feel if you had every Friday, Saturday, and Sunday off, or every Saturday, Sunday, Monday off. It makes a huge, and it can increase, and it's proven to increase productivity. But just for a morale purpose, you're like, hey, I can't give you the money, but here's what I do want to do. I want to make sure you get to spend more time with your family. I want to make sure that you can take care of your personal issues. And so we're going to change for that and create more flexibility to allow you to do these things. And hopefully you recognize it's because I care about you. And if they leave there believing you care about them, it's going to take a lot of money to pull them out of that situation.
Yeah,
I'm not saying they can't be done.
Yeah,
but they're not going to leave you because somebody's going to give them $2,000 more a year.
No, that's a great way of thinking outside the box, because if you can't do it monetarily, you got to figure out a different way to keep your people happy. And you know, much like a lot of non-for-profits too, it's important that they believe in the purpose of that non-for-profit. If they feel like it's just not going anywhere, then there's no reason to stick it out. And a lot of people even work passively. And we talk about passive income here at Tony Curry Radio a lot. You know, listen, you know where we're going, you know what we want to do. So when we get there, I'll take care of you. You just have to trust me this process. And thank God they normally do. I do want to ask you about this. And I get somebody in the studio just asked this question. I thought it was really interesting. When I was in radio, I was in Louisville, Kentucky. And I had asked for the afternoon job. They said no. And I asked for a raise and they said no. And so there were some sour grapes there and I was really good at what I was doing. And so when another job opportunity, it was so bad that I was going to quit and go back to college up at Xavier, but it got so bad that another job had opened up. It was going to pay me an additional $10,000 a year. It was a no brainer for me to take this other job. And that so happened to be the job down here in Birmingham. But I made a major mistake and I still believe this, and you can expound on this. Okay. I didn't give my current employer a chance to make me an offer before I accepted the new job. I went in, I resigned, and they were like, well, wait a minute, let's talk about this. Let's find out what's the problem and this, that, and the other. And I really burned that bridge because I quit before they even had a chance to make me an offer. Talk about how that goes, because with so many people in this mass resignation, this great resignation we're going through, I think a lot of people, listen, we all dream and fantasize about walking into our boss's office and telling him to go screw himself, throw our papers down and walk out. But I do think it's important for a couple of reasons. First of all, you want to find out what you're worth. You know, maybe they're waiting for someone else to come along and they realize they cannot work without you. And so they're willing, despite the fact they've said for 3 years, I can't pay you anymore, they'll find the money. But just talk about that process and how important it is to not burn that bridge.
Yeah, so, and I'll talk about it more from, so that's more from an employee's perspective. And that's important because you're going to need to network and need as many connections as you can, especially if you ever wanted to come back to an organization. But I faced that very same thing from one of the guys in IT. And I knew that I was paying him as much as I could pay for the position, but he needed more money. And so he came to me with a job and said, hey, I've been offered this job. And it was just way more than I could pay. And I told him, I said, man, I'm so happy for you. Now, he left here, and I think he was hurt that I did not counter the offer. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't because he wasn't valued. It was just so far out of my ballpark. You know, if he would have communicated to me, and you can go back and talk about how important it is to communicate and not take a position. If he would have come back and said, Michael, with benefits and everything, I'm going to be making $20,000 more, but I really want to stay. I like the culture. If you could get me halfway there to 10, I'm not saying I could or couldn't, yeah, but what I'm saying is then that would have put the ball back to me and I could have done something about it. But where he was basically just, I'm gonna give you a chance to match it. And I just simply, you know, in the where we are in life, I just couldn't expend that amount of money. But I do agree with your point that it's so important to communicate. It does you no good as a leader if people leave there and you don't know why they left. And some people say, I don't care. I don't wanna hear their complaining. I don't wanna hear their griping. And that's a foolish perspective, in my opinion, yep, because even if it's something negative about me personally, I will only grow from that if I listen to it. Now, nobody likes to hear negative things about you, but we make sure we do exit interviews with all our employees and to make sure, what can we learn? What can we glean? Because if I can learn something about myself that I need to change or that I need to do different, I can prevent the same thing happening. So I'm looking at it long term because I genuinely want the best environment I can. And if I'm not providing that, that's not my employee's fault. That's not my employee's fault if they all begin to leave because they're miserable. I don't pay well and I'm demanding and I'm all these things. And they're like, I'm just suffocating. That's not my employee's fault. That's my fault. And so I have to work every single day to try to communicate to them their value. And I'll be the first to say, I get caught up in being busy, and I don't praise enough. I don't recognize enough. I don't take just a few minutes to walk in somebody's office and say, hey, I just want to tell you, I don't know where we'd be without you. You do such a phenomenal job. But it's little things like that. There's a book that talks about five love languages, and we use it for marriages and try to understand how to communicate, because your gifts may be, I mean, you may feel love by words of affirmation. Somebody else may be feel love by gift giving. So I learned this in my last job that I had, and I was trying to figure out how to please. And I recognized, hey, one size doesn't fit all. I could go write somebody a note and say how well they're doing. But if I wrote everybody a note, it's not going to have the same impact, because some people may think gifts are how you speak my love language. And so you might go get a little something and just say, hey, just thinking of you and just want to get this for you because you're so special for this organization. Now, what does that require of the leader? A lot. It requires you to learn your employees and what makes them tick and what's important to them, and then respond to them in the way that they need responding to. That's how you build a culture that says they are valued, they're appreciated, and you want them to stay. And I'm telling you, if you can connect to them on that kind of level where they leave here and go, hey, I don't care what goes on in this organization, there's one thing I know is my boss authentically cares about me and he supports me no matter what is going to happen.
Yes.
You are going to do a much better job of retaining your best employees.
I always like to think that regardless of what position I'm in or where I'm at, that any person that I've ever worked with, I will work with them again. And maybe that's just because in radio, it seems like we do end up working with each other again in some in some capacity. But I always, whenever I'm with somebody and they could be here for one day, I always assume that I'm going to see them again, whether I think they're at a higher power level or a lower power level than I, maybe we could work together. Hey, great show. And you do this whole process. I think a really interesting show idea, and we could do this down the road, is the whole, because you've interviewed a ton of people, but I'd love to hear your thoughts on the entire interview process, not only in non-for-profits, but in, you know, for money businesses, and some of the important things, because one of the reasons I asked that question about, you know, people leaving before they give their current employer a chance to at least make another offer is most of the times, when, depending on how long you've been in a business, they're going to say, why did you leave this company? Or certainly to resign from that position as opposed to get fired from it is a much better look on a resume. But I do think a lot of people, I've been asked that question a million times. So you were at that company for 20 years. What happened? Why did you leave that company? So we'll get into that coming up maybe in the next couple of weeks. Hey, Michael, great stuff, man. I appreciate you.
Thoroughly enjoyed it as always.
We'll talk to you next week. That's Mission Minded here on Tony Curry Radio.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.